So if anyone feels like moving closer, you're welcome to do that. Otherwise, I'll try to speak out enough, because everyone looks very comfortable, pretty comfortable, which may not be all the time the case. I was struck today by the quality of the way something can be two things, two opposing things at exactly the same moment. The way maybe in the meditation we can feel both, I'm dying for this to end, and also please don't let it end, because there's some sweet drops that I still would like to get out of this before my opportunity is wasted. And also, please, where's that bell sound? And maybe the retreat also, there are moments of, could it just be day seven? And also, please day seven never arrive. So everything can just soak in all the way. And that sense of enjoying and driving ourselves crazy. Enjoying and driving ourselves crazy. Which one? Somehow both. And sometimes that very wordless, subtle place of drops or moments that then seem to sort of spill away into something that feels so wrong. And where's that other thing? And it can't be gathered back. Or in some kind of sustained more silence or more space, the small irritation or the strong judgment just sort of really quakes in our system. How could I be so petty? How could I just blah? Why is it like that? How could they be so? All that. And it just feels scratchier or harsher, stronger. So yesterday Jaya was talking about toilets, and today I'm bringing in just slightly more sanitary, including toilets, but just tidying up. So I think it was only yesterday, having been here a week, that I finally had it all together and also the intention to just fully tidy up my little space. From veranda to room to toilet, all the way through, including a bit of wash. And it was both kind of, wow, there's a, you know, full maybe 20 minutes to only do that. And also, it's so small and joyful compared to home. And also that special retreat situation that we're all benefiting from so much of concentration, things just getting clear. So it's really can be seen the way it works. So what I really noticed, even just with that broom, different from the home broom, just from that broom, that it seemed like my muscle tone was too strong. Also for the dust, it didn't really help, just blows it all around, but also for the intention. It's just a little small job, so why be so, you know, what else is there to do after? It's just on the schedule, whatever it is, it's just that next thing, so why rush through it? And then And then I found myself getting, okay, so let's release this muscle tone and it's looser. And then, but is that kind of a not caring? That almost seems I'm not taking this, it's a sweet little job. Couldn't I just find the right, and it was this kind of awkwardness, which is maybe that same way of enjoying and also driving yourself a little bit crazy, and also it's useful to see all of that. And remembering how at home it's such a big job. It's a big daily job. So it's, it's on a normal day, three kids will leave the house, bus driven and taken, and often, and my husband will go off, and many times I'll have a morning class, so the chores get done only after. And all of 6:30 to 8 a.m. is just laying there waiting. Crumbs and piles of pajamas for whoever didn't put them away, and breakfast, whatever it was. It's all there. Unfortunately, sometimes some things are better rinsed first, but it doesn't always happen. So there can be with those bigger jobs, when there's a lot, there can be that initial, and this is definitely example and metaphor, both. So there can be that the mind trying to figure out so many things, like what would be really the best way to handle this, and what's missing here. So maybe I'm missing the right organizational things that I. IKEA or the little book of the art of tidying and organization, and you know, there must be a better way. And also little places of blame. So here there's not enough discipline or communication because this shouldn't really be waiting for me. Something, so there's a lot of kind of ideas, and also the idea of really wanting to get it done, because between that and the next thing is my time. This is the chore, and later it's this kind of ever shrinking horizon of personal time. And so it can be that just coming at it again and again we begin to one can begin to sort of let go of some of the ideas. There may be a better way, but anyway it needs to get done, and there could be better communication. But anyway, that's so dynamic, and that changes, and anyway, there are clothes, and there are dishes, and there are books, and there's life. And it tidies up and messes out. It tidies up and messes up. It does that. It just does that. Problems and solutions. So there can be kind of a between the hard muscle and the soft muscle, between the forceful and the lax, and the knowing that you really just want to get it out of the way, to just kind of it drops. I'm tired of arguing with myself and with the people who are not here and with the philosophies that I don't manage to live up to also. And I'm so tired of that I'm really willing to let that settle as I sweep the floor. And it's just, I'm sweeping, and it's boring, and it's this is what needs to be done, and that's all. And sometimes that kind of it's a minor relief. It's not a major relief. It's kind of an in-between. But it can be sort of taking the should and the what if and the kind of seen, unseen dogma and just letting that rest and staying with knowing less about it, knowing less about the right way and still all the different things. And still knowing less the right way can be this very fruitful ground for what we don't know yet, maybe. There's a story that I like, see if I remember, of children's story of Frog and Toad. I don't know how familiar it is, but to some maybe. So it's these friendship stories of these two characters, Frog and Toad. And Toad is usually the quite, life is hard for Toad. And in this story called Tomorrow, Toad is lying in bed sort of with the blanket over his head and Frog, the loyal friend, peeps through the window and he says, well, what are you doing? And Toad says, I'm resting. I'm just taking life easy. And Frog says, but your house is such a mess. Look, your clothes are all over. And he says, I'll do it tomorrow. Today I'm taking life easy. And he says, but look, your dishes are just piled in the sink. Tomorrow, today I'm just taking life easy. And he says, there's dust all over your chairs and your garden needs watering and your windows need scrubbing and just tomorrow. And then Toad really starts to be tormented by this. Tomorrow just seems like hell and he cannot rest. So he gets out of bed and you see him just marching through each and every item listed, the clothes and the dishes and the scrubbing and the watering. And then he says, now I'm done. And then he has this thought of tomorrow. Tomorrow I can take life easy. So it just sort of, it moved. But there is, and maybe he didn't really get it, but he got what we all could use, which is Frog as a friend to listen and follow it through with him. And then I guess it can be in that level of, it's okay, I'm just cleaning up. It's just what I have to do. It's not the greatest, but I'm not, I don't see the arguments marching through my head. And sometimes that kind of dullness, that there's no real joy or spark, can be that some of the arguments are marching behind my back. Still, so something is still, I'm being very graceful now and picking up somebody else's stuff. And it's how nice to just feel that it's a non-problem for me. But somewhere there's a pinch. And it could be about other people, it could be about, it doesn't have only an outward arrow. I'm really okay with this kind of. But sometimes it can be so helpful to feel almost that limbo. The dogma or the shoulds are getting me really really nowhere. And kind of like Toad, I have this dream of rest. It's really a dream. And it's somehow not, it's not opening out like the sunset or something in my day. And there begins to be sort of this fruitful ground, this good possibility in the just, okay, it's fun and it's not fun, or it's, I don't know what it is, it's just happening. For something that just comes up out of nowhere, the sort of the body does it, and then you, what was that? To read just these lines from, yes, I did bring my glasses, from a poem by T.S. Eliot. This is kind of in this in-between place. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. For hope would be hope for the wrong thing. Wait without love. For love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love and the hope are all in the waiting. So what would that be? Just like seeds that don't, that no plant is visible. And you're just doing the thing, moving through whatever it is. I had, it's just such a small thing, but I remembered it, so I'm sharing it. This moment, maybe 2.5 weeks before the flying to India, of, as everyone can probably imagine, and in their, from their own lives, not imagine, but know before travel, that extra busyness that happens. And I was driving up to Jerusalem specifically to do the visas for India. There's an office there that handles it. It's not the embassy. And in the morning, it's very hard to approach any city, right, in traffic. So this was a smaller, easier entrance to the city, but still, I was still maybe the 40th car going up the hill before the, you know, every time the red light, so green light, slight advance. But it was easy also because I have an automatic car, sort of unfortunately, but still it's easier up the hill and you don't have to do much. But just keep your small little distance from the next car and go a couple of meters every time. So your head can really be full, and it's not a problem, of everything that you need to do. And it's just going, And at some point, I noticed my foot. I'm not going to go into the whole cultural thing about in Israel driving, but it's in there. Anyway, I noticed that I had hit the brake, even though I had a lot of space. And I turned to see that there was another car coming out of just a small driveway. And what my body had done is to let that driver through. I didn't plan it, and so that's the less common in our culture of driving thing. But it wasn't about thinking about being helpful. It wasn't that. And actually, I noticed, I could just see the driver looking at me with such joy and relief. I have no idea how long he was waiting, but he had been waiting for sure. And it was just such a bing out of all of that busyness. And mostly what was so nice was that it came from the foot, almost. The foot. foot, and then the eyes saw it, and then the mind took it in. And this happened. And it's just, you know, not that big of a deal, but sort of joyful anyway. So there's the mess. And there's the making a war on the mess. The sort of the days of I'm going to eradicate the pile of laundry. That's it. And it actually didn't go down. How does that work? But the war paint is there. There's that. The soap is sticky, and the dust is endless also. And there is kind of a just a slow surrender, which can and I think does get speeded up on retreat, but a slow surrender to the weather of life, to the seasons, to the messing up and messing down. I noticed a shift in me about, I think it started just a bit over a year ago, where something that I had clearly been holding for so long kind of made some space, not for the other car, but in an even more helpful way. It was sort of the chronic lifelong avoidance of being at fault, especially in hurting feelings. That was like especially not something I ever wanted to be caught doing, is hurting someone's feelings. Of course, that happens all the time anyway, but just not wanting to be in that confrontation. So I noticed that this kind of black hole resistance had just sort of opened, and it was roomier to live, but immediately things came in there. So which partly helped me notice it, but there was a very big confrontation with my closest friend and neighbor and partner who had felt on one specific occasion that I had just really betrayed her with not helping in a shared situation, and just the ability to hear the force and the angry hurt, the very angry, very hurt from her side, and not resisting it, and also feeling faithful to my own, that it wasn't possible, that I couldn't really have come through, that would have done something else that wasn't good, basically. And just to feel her and my situation, not the usual, not resisting, and not the usual sort of what can I say? How can I bring it back up here and make it something okay? Justify. And just not needing to do that. A little bit like standing under sort of a rain that stings you. Really, something very strong. And it was interesting that was maybe a big one. But then there was a parade the whole last year. Suddenly this can come, and especially with my eldest son, he really caught on that it's okay, and there he had a lot to say. And usually he's quite passionate anyway and very, very positive, but every kind of, when you said that about, you know, his sister and not that, that was just, and just also feeling how vulnerable, how tender. And this kind of flexible steadiness, that it really isn't annihilating me. How amazing! I didn't know that for so long. It doesn't kill you, and it does open. It does create so much possibility for connection, and even just on this retreat, just one little kind of happened already in that same way, and it could open. It could be heard and accepted and open, and I'd like to read. Oh, I hope I find it. From Pema Chodron. Just her wonderful way of talking about obstacles as life's journey. And she says, the warrior is always coming up against dragons. Of course, the warrior gets scared, particularly before the battle. It's frightening, but with a shaky, tender heart, the warrior realizes that he or she is just about to step into the unknown, and then goes forth to meet the dragon. The warrior realizes that the dragon is nothing but unfinished business presenting itself, and that it's fear that really needs to be worked with. The dragon is just a motion picture that appears there, and it appears in many forms, as the lover who jilted us, as the parent who never loved us enough, as someone who abused us. Basically, what we work with is our fear and our holding back, which are not necessarily obstacles. The only obstacle is this refusal to look at our unfinished business. If every time the warrior goes out and meets the dragon, he or she says, ha, it's a dragon again, no way am I going to face this, and just splits, leaves, then life becomes a recurring story of getting up in the morning, going out, meeting the dragon, saying no way, and splitting. In that case, you become more and more timid, and more afraid, and more of a baby. No one is nurturing you, but you're still in that cradle, and you never go through your puberty rites. Puberty rites. So maybe we can notice that subtle way that the muscle tone, figuratively and also maybe really, can just settle between that too much to get through, to get there, and the too little maybe I don't really care. And be in it. Drops of drops of wonderful, drops of dragon, drops of everything, or crumbs in the carpet and Lego all over the floor or whatever, but and still, and through sort of through the crumbs and the Lego or the whatever and the whatever, see the beauty of the home or the life through it, just through the cracks of what's supposedly not there, as a way of gaining the strength for the bigger dragons or the black holes. Very wonderful yoga teacher that I met, Sandra Sabatini, said, you have two friends, gravity and levity, and you always have those friends. So maybe just when we feel there isn't anything, the shoulds are gone and the muscle tone is awkward about what to do and how to do, and the unexpected gesture didn't come, isn't here, and I'm just falling and just feeling kind of T.S. Eliot, where the trust and the faith and the love in the sort of waiting, they're in there, or the gravity, the earth. Thich Nhat Hanh talks about seeing the rose in the garbage and the garbage in the rose, kind of famously. But I want to read a story that he. Oops, old book. About Buddha and Mara that he tells. One day, the Buddha was in his cave, and Ananda, who was the Buddha's assistant, was standing outside near the door. Suddenly, Ananda saw Mara coming. He was surprised. He didn't want that, and he wished Mara would get lost. But Mara walked straight to Ananda and asked him to announce his visit to the Buddha. Ananda said, "Why have you come here? Don't you remember that in olden times you were defeated by the Buddha under the Bodhi tree? Aren't you ashamed to come here? Go away. The Buddha will not see you. You are evil. You are his enemy." When Mara heard this, he began to laugh and laugh. "Did you say that your teacher told you that he has enemies?" That made Ananda very embarrassed. He knew that his teacher had not said that he has enemies. So Ananda was defeated and had to go in and announce the visit of Mara, hoping that the Buddha would say, "Go and tell him that I'm not here, tell him that I'm at a meeting." But the Buddha was very excited when he heard that Mara, such a very old friend, had come to visit him. "Is that true? Is he really here?" the Buddha said, and he went out in person to greet Mara. Ananda was very distressed. The Buddha went right up to Mara, bowed to him, and took his hands in his in the warmest way. The Buddha said, "Hello, how are you? How have you been? Is everything all right?" Mara didn't say anything. So the Buddha brought him into the cave, prepared a seat for him to sit down, and told Ananda to go and make a herb tea for both of them. "I can make tea for my master 100 times a day, but making tea for Mara is not a joy," Ananda thought to himself. But since this was the order of his master, how could he refuse? So Ananda went to prepare some herb tea for the Buddha and his so-called guest. But while doing this, he tried to listen to their conversation. The Buddha repeated very warmly, "How have you been? How are things with you?" Mara said, "Things are not going well at all. I am tired of being a Mara. I want to be something else." Ananda became very frightened. Mara said, "You know, being a Mara is not a very easy thing to do. If you talk, you have to talk in riddles. If you do anything, you have to be tricky and look evil. I'm very tired of all that. But what I cannot bear is my disciples. They are now talking about social justice, peace, equality, liberation, non-duality, non-violence, all of that. I've had enough of it. I think that it would be better if I hand them all over to you. I want to be something else." Ananda began to shudder because he was afraid that the master would decide to take the other role. Mara would become the Buddha, and the Buddha would become Mara. It made him very sad. The Buddha listened attentively and was filled with compassion. Finally, he said in a quiet voice, "Do you think it's fun being a Buddha? You don't know what my disciples have done to me. They put words into my mouth that I never said. They build garish temples and put statues of me on altars in order to attract bananas and oranges and sweet rice just for themselves. And they package me and make my teaching into an item of commerce. Mara, if you knew what it is really like to be a Buddha, I'm sure you wouldn't want to be one." So, just so we can laugh a little bit. And make some space for driving ourselves a little bit crazy without taking it to heart. And maybe remembering also not only that we're not alone, but that in the falling, we might not know what it is that's there, but it isn't nothing. So we can't put the tag on what to trust or what to love or what to have faith in, but they're there in the waiting, and ground for what we don't expect also, which could just be this mixed thing of life. Thank you for listening. May our practice be dedicated to the momentum of awakening, of living fully, courageously.